Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon. QT and Sign Guy with you as always, and we are joined by our new co-host, JB Moonshine. Welcome to the team.
Hey, what's up?
And we are also joined by our guest today. He is out of the Mid-Atlantic region, one of my favorite sports entertainers of all time, Scrapyard Dog. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Good to be back after the long absence. Thank you.
Well, Scrapyard, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is something that you've been doing for a while now. I've become a big fan of it, and that is your own program, Conspiracy Talk. It is on Dialafula Debashi's network. He runs a series of programs, yours among them. What was the process like getting Conspiracy Talk off the ground?
Well, I think it stemmed out of us coming up with, I was just, you know, come on as a regular guest on this podcast, and we started covering different type of conspiracies, involved around, not related to wrestling, but we were just talking about conspiracy as we were doing things related to wrestling. And so it just kind of, got born from that. And we just sitting around talking one day, we said, what about we just make a show where we deal with nothing but conspiracy theories? And I think one of the first few ones we did covered the JFK assassination. It just took off from there. We went from there to, 9/11 and the Federal Reserve conspiracy, FDA and Big Pharma conspiracy, just a lot of different. Marilyn Monroe was covered. We just finished one with the assassination of Martin Luther King, the conspiracy behind that. That's a good show. I think you need to go check that out. There's some very interesting points and new evidence that was brought up in there that a lot of people don't know about. So it was just kind of born out of, it started with wrestling, and then we started talking about conspiracies and politicians and how they really don't control anything, and it just evolved from there. So once we decided to go with the show, doing our own show and naming the Conspiracy Talk, like I said, it just took off.
One of the big conspiracies within wrestling, which you haven't covered yet, but I'm curious on your take on this, Jimmy Snuka was implicated in the death of Nancy Argentina in the early 80s. It was swept under the rug for a very long time. He never went to jail for it, although he did lose the civil suit that the family brought on him. Decades after this, the case was reopened when he wrote about the incident in his own autobiography. What was your take on this entire Jimmy Snuka conspiracy?
I don't know. It kind of parallels O.J. Simpson case for a minute, because if you think about it, O.J. wasn't convicted in the criminal trial, but the civil case, they found him liable. So, it parallels that. I don't know. It's kind of I really didn't get too much into the Jimmy Snuka thing. I read a little bit about it. I didn't really study it like some of the ones I've studied. I just don't know what to think about until I get more, you know, get more into it and read more about it. But I do remember hearing about it, and because it was a big thing for a little while. But here again, you know, when you start talking about things and writing stuff in books and stuff like that, and then becomes people start wanting who thought you were guilty want to, you know, tear that down and reopen the investigation. You open yourself up for a can of worms, and that's exactly what happened. So, but I intend to look more into that and see what that case is all about from start to finish.
Now, your partner in crime, Diafula DeBasi, wanted me to ask you if you have, in fact, proposed to Oscar, and if so, will he be doing the ceremony, or are you going to hire me to perform that ceremony?
I had to go with DeBasi on that. Nothing against you. Don't get me wrong. I love you guys both. Yeah. But if DeBasi couldn't do it, now you'd be next in line. But, you know, yeah, I've always called Oscar my wifey, you know, because I love watching her work in the ring, love watching her wrestle. Leaves a little bit desired on promos, but, you know, as far as her in-ring work, awesome. And I just kind of took to her, and, you know, in the Kabuki Warriors as a tag team because it reminded me, it's a throwback to, you know, the great Kabuki and, you know, all the Japanese wrestlers of the era, especially with the green and red mist and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'm a huge Oscar fan. No question about it.
Now, you say if DeBasi couldn't make it, so if I just were to make sure DeBasi had problems getting there, I would have the job.
Yeah, you had the job. You'd be second in line. You'd be second in command. No question about it.
I hope he doesn't have plane trouble that day.
Yeah, I heard that.
DeBasi also wanted me to ask you this. I believe we covered it before, but it's a great moment. I'll bring it up again. He went all the way to North Carolina, and he got me a Scrapyard Dog autograph. It was very unique. And that autograph was signed in your very own blood. Do you remember DeBasi coming to you for the autograph?
Yeah, I remember that. I think it was at one of the AIWF anniversary shows, if I'm not mistaken. And me and him both was booked on the show. And I was in the blood match. I think a cage match, if I'm not mistaken. And after the match, we cut a promo. And, of course, I let DeBasi take the lead in the promo. I did a little bit of promo and then a little talking in it. But, you know, that's kind of like symbolism for me. I signed an autograph for you in my own blood to show that we're blood brothers in this business. And that was the reason behind that. But, yeah, I do remember that. Like I said, it was a good show that night. It was a packed house. And if I'm not mistaken, DeBasi wrestled Chief that night. Chief Adekunle, if I'm not mistaken. And
I believe you're right.
And I think I had Foley that night inside the cage. I do remember that. Yeah, that was a good moment. I mean, he cut a good promo, and I was just, going along for the ride. But, yeah, I enjoyed that night. Yeah, I remember that vividly.
As do I when I saw the video, for sure. But at this point, we have a brand new co-host, JB Moonshine, is with us. And JB, do you have questions for the Scrapyard Dog?
Let me see. I'm new at this. Let's see.
First day, we get it.
I'm used to people asking me questions. I'm not used to having to ask questions.
Yeah, I take your time.
Well, I guess we'll go with easy ones. Like how long have you been in the business? Or, you know, like, how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, I started training in 98 with some people. I think this is my 22nd year in the business. And I think I met my first trainer, Manny Fernandez, Raging Bull Manny Fernandez from the old NWA. Met him in, I think it was either early 2000 or late 2000, started training with him. And then I trained with him for a while, and then I went to USIW for Winston, started training with a guy by the name of Josh Jerry and Damian Storm, who was one half of the Storm Brothers tag team. And I took some training, but there's been a lot of guys over the years that have mentored me and taught me things about this business, taught me about the respect of the business, how to protect the business, the psychology, you know, of a wrestling match and things of that nature. So I think, you know, yeah, 98 is when I started, and like I said, I've been doing it 22 years. Repeat that.
How many places have you traveled to, or, you know, how many states have you competed in?
Basically, all over the Southeast. I pretty much, you know, love the Mid-Atlantic area because that was the territory growing up, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Jim Crockett Promotions. You know, and the central hub of that was the Greensboro Coliseum. That's where all the big shows were held. And I was at every one of them. I was there for every Starcade, every house show, everything like that. I was there. And it, the interesting thing about it, it was kind of hard to get ringside seats back then. So I sat up in the nosebleed seats. And a lot of people didn't gonna believe this, but back then, well, maybe some people will, but back then, nosebleed seats, tickets were like $5 or $6. To sit that far up now probably cost you, what, $50 at a pay-per-view event, or even more.
Oh, yeah. Depending on who the free dinner with us.
Exactly.
So what got you into the business? I mean, what made you want to be, a wrestler?
What made me want to be a wrestler? I guess growing up watching as a kid, because you got to understand something, in the 1980s, I was in my early teens. 1980, I was 13 years old. I was 13 years old in 1980. So from, like, I say 79 to about, you know, all through the 80s and part of the 90s, and, you know, that's what I was in the wrestling big time. And when I got the call or the opportunity to train, you know, I leaped at it. I jumped at it because it's something I've always wanted to do, because it stems from, like I said, me watching the business on watching wrestling on TV. And then when I finally got in the business, was able to learn the business, you know, that was the icing on the cake for me. What's my favorite match?
Yeah, like your favorite all-time match.
Are you asking me what's my favorite match that I've done, or ones I've watched?
No, the one that you've done. You know, what's your
one you've
done?
Some of my favorite matches are, I guess, some of the hardcore stuff I've done against the Beastmaster Rick Link and Dick Foley. Yeah, I tend to like a lot of gimmick matches. Cage matches, barbed wire matches, thumbtack matches, dog collar matches, strap matches. Did a Russian chain match against Ivan Koloff. Now that was a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, but that was a lot of fun. Getting a chance to work on Kalivan, and I said a lot of the gimmick matches that I just mentioned. Those have been some of my favorites.
Oh,
Well, how many gimmicks have I had? I think I can tell you this. Before there was a Scrapyard Dog, I'm going to tell you how I got that name, first of all. I got that name from a promoter who was working with another guy in Asbury when he was doing TV. And he's a good personal friend of mine. And I was coming in new to his promotion down in Asheboro, and he said, you know, because I had a full beard at the time, and he said, you know, you kind of look like the Junkyard Dog. He said, instead of calling yourself JYD Jr. or, you know, anything like that, why don't we just go with Scrapyard Dog? And this was in 2005. And I told him, I said, hey, that's good. I said, we'll try that. And it just stuck, and I've been using it ever since 2005. But prior to that, I used to go by the name Cobra. USIWF, I've went by Maniac Rip Manson. I've used that name. But like I said, I've been using Scrapyard Dog ever since 2005. It's pretty much worked for me.
Oh, that's good.
Well, here's the thing with finishers. A lot of guys, if you look at a lot of matches, they got to hit some big bump, you know, for a finishing move. Me personally, I like submissions sometimes with finishers. Right now, I use the Cobra Clutch guillotines, like a Cobra Clutch, like Sergeant Slaughter used to use. But you clip the left leg. I clip my opponent's left leg with my foot. Make him collapse that knee to the mat, and then I sit back and grapevine. Well, while I got the Cobra Clutch on him, I sit back and grapevine my legs around that mix session. So that's basically the submission move that I use. It's called Cobra Clutch Guillotine.
Oh, okay. So you're more like a grappler, you know, like a grappling type wrestler.
Yeah, grappler, ground and pound, that type of thing. Yeah. I tend to work a lot from the mat up, because if you look at wrestling nowadays, all you see is spots. You don't see a lot of groundwork. You don't see a lot of guys working the match from the ground up.
Yeah, for sure.
Nowadays it's all 50,000 spots inside of 2 minutes, which makes absolutely no sense to me. But that's the way wrestling is today.
Yes, it is. I'll see that all the time. Yeah. I get tired just watching it. Do you run your own type of school, or do you have your own learning seminar type, you know, thing, or? You help young kids get into the business, right?
So repeat that one more time.
Okay. Do you run a seminars or your own gym? Do you get younger kids in the business or help them out type thing?
I used to do seminars all the time in the past. I've trained a lot of guys in the business. I've trained you know him as Cameron Grimes, you know Trevor Lee. Him and Ty Tyson was in the same training class I had down at Power Pro Wrestling back in Sanford. That was in 2008. So Trevor Lee got his start with me because I knew his daddy, Tracy Goodell, real good. And and also trained Rob Killjoy, Tommy Pinarelli, and there's been a lot of other guys, you know, that I've mentored, you know, over the years and you know, gave them advice. And, you know, Ooga Booga is another guy that I that does like a Kamala type gimmick, you know. I went as, you know, his first trainer, but you know, I helped him because I probably wrestled him more than I have anybody else in the business, and we always go to shows and I give him a few pointers about this, that, and the other, and you know, when we got a chance to work each other, you know, it was my chance to teach. So I took that opportunity, and you know, we went everywhere together, and that was another thing. That was some of my fun matches, because those matches against him were always stiff. Always stiff. We always worked snug. Always worked stiff.
That is always a good way. I like to always work that way too. What's the biggest name you've ever worked?
Well, what's the what now?
What's the biggest name that you've ever worked?
I've worked. I can tell you the names I've worked. I've worked the Barbarian.
Watch that match. That was pretty good.
Oh, that was great. Barbarian.
Yeah,
he's easy.
To,
yeah, he's you know, he's easy to work. I've worked Stro from WCW. I've worked Sabu from ECW. You know, of course, Manny, my trainer. Beastmaster Rick Link from the old NWA, who used to work the Memphis territories with Jerry the King Lawler. I've been in the ring with Ricky Morton. Worked him in a 6-man tag one time. Taking a Russian sickle from Nikita Koloff. Worked Ivan Koloff before. Those are some of the names I've and I've also been on shows with the Hardys and Hurricane Helms and you know guys like that. So and I've been around and done a few things. Been fortunate to do a few things.
That's cool. Yeah,
I tell you one tag team I met when I met Barbarian and Ming together, Faces of Fear, and a show in Thomasville. Ming, super nice guy. Super nice. Don't piss him off, though. Now, I'm going to tell you that. Don't piss him off. Because, you know, from the stories I've heard, that ain't the guy you want to get pissed off at you. But, you know, just to come up to him and talk to him and take a picture with him, super nice guy. Super nice guy.
That's cool. What's the farthest that you've ever traveled to put on a show or to work?
Repeat that one more time.
What's the farthest that you traveled to, you know, work or put on a show?
Well, I've been out to like West, you know, like long, years ago. Did some stuff in the deep southeast years ago. I mean, that's like when I first got started. I can't remember the exact towns and stuff. But like I say, pretty much I just keep it pretty much now. I don't travel as much as I used to. I used to travel all over. And the thing, it got to a point, especially in the Mid-Atlantic, it got to a point where I would try to do such a good job at some of the shows, like I say, in Tennessee, West Virginia, and, you know, South Carolina. And it just became just a revolving door. It just kept getting asked back. So I said, well, you know, I just make a circuit of this right here. And that's exactly what it did. So, you know, like I said, Mid-Atlantic territory is basically my home because, like I said, that's what I grew up watching. The Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. When you had Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, like that. So that's pretty much my area.
So how many promotions do you work right now?
Say what now?
So how many promotions do you work at right now?
I think, let's see, I think I have a total of like, let's say I work for AIWF, cage wrestling. A couple of my promotions I was working for on a regular basis, like CWS, and hadn't run in a while. I got about three or four good ones where it used to be like 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It was 10 or 12 that I was working on a revolving basis. Those promoters don't run as much as frequently as they used to. That's why I've been falling off. You know, but I've been a stable in the AIWF for years, and I was doing BWF in Virginia. That took care of all my Virginia bookings. And AIWF had some bookings in Virginia. And let's see. I did some AIWF affiliate shows in Tennessee. Did some shows in South Carolina before with some promoters down there. But right now, pretty much, I think I got about three or four good ones that I see on a continual basis. And I pretty much confined to a small area because, like I say, I got a whole lot of things going on, like trying to write my next book and doing the podcast. And I don't travel as much as I used to because it was a nothing 10 years ago to have 6-7 matches a month, every month, for like 5 years. So you know, a lot of the business has changed, and a lot of those promoters are not running anymore. So you know, for whatever reason, so that number is, you know, it's starting to come down. So.
Yeah. So did you used to do this as a living? Like, did you wrestle like everywhere for like pay your bills type thing, or do you have like another job?
I have a regular, you know, job that I work. I've been working at the last 16 years, and I do the wrestling thing, you know, like I say, on the weekend, like most guys do. But like I say, I pick and choose my spots. You know, first thing I do is make sure I'm wrestling somewhere I'm gonna get paid. Number one.
Yeah.
that's first things first. And then, do I like the locker room? Do I like the promoter? Do I like the guys in the locker room? Do I like the staff? You know, do I enjoy being around the fans or whatever? See, it's a lot of factors going in to it nowadays as opposed to 15, 20 years ago when I would just wrestle. Oh, there's a show somewhere. Oh, let me go. Oh, there's a show here. There's a show right here. Let me go. You know, I pick and choose my spots more wisely now than I did when I first started.
Definitely, especially if you have a real job, you gotta make sure you don't get hurt, or you know.
Oh yeah, you gotta make sure the bills paid. Now, I mean, it's okay to want to wrestle and get out there and do this and do that, but at the end of the day, the bills still gotta get paid. You know, you gotta make sure they get paid. And basically, you know, now after 22 years of doing it. You know, of course, it's a side gig now. It's a side job. It's like having a second job. And, you know, you get paid to wrestle, and I set up my table and make money off my gimmick table, selling T-shirts. It all goes in that pot. You know, because I remember one time, and I'm going to tell you how this will sum it up for you. I remember I had a show one time. I had just paid my bills with my regular check, and I was dead broke. Okay, guy called me for a show that particular weekend. I went and did the show. I had just enough gas. Now, check this out. I had just enough gas to get to the building. Okay? I got paid to do the show and sold some gimmicks. I think I made roughly about $75 total. Okay, when I left the building, there was a gas station. Right around the corner from the building. And I went to the gas station, and the guy was right about to close up. I got there just enough time to get me some gas. I gave him like $15 worth of gas. I got my gas in my tank, and I, you know, made it back home. So, you know, it has its place. Because, like I said, I wouldn't have had enough gas to run on the next 2 weeks until I got my next paycheck, you know, because I just paid my bills and covered all my expenses. But that show, that weekend, had me some pocket where I was able to buy some food and put a little gas in the tank, and I was able to, you know, with that $75, ride it out for 2 weeks until I got the next paycheck. So, you know, it depends on how you, you know, because guys want to get on some of these shows and, oh, I got to make $200. I got to make, I mean, now if you go into the, you know, West Coast and Midwest, I can see you getting paid $300-$400. I can get that because it's going to be a lot of travel expense to get there and do the show. I understand that. But, you know, but they want to get that kind of money going 30 minutes down the road. And ain't no promoter going to pay you that. But in a situation like that, I needed that little bit of money to get gas in my tank so I could get home.
Yeah, I've been in that situation.
So, you know, in that respect, and that's the way I look at it, in that respect, professional wrestling has been good to me. Because there's been several instances like that where you're just a little bit short, and it happens to everybody. It happens to everybody.
Yeah.
Because if it didn't, you know, you wouldn't have the majority of the people in this country working two and three jobs to make ends meet. And that's why the economy, the unemployment rate is so low. Because you got one individual working two or three jobs, got a main job that's maybe two or three side jobs, and you got another vision over here working two jobs. But so sometimes you need that, you know, the extra income of that second job on the back burner to get you through, and that's what happened to me. So thank you, Professor Wrestler.
Yeah, I definitely understand. I've been in that situation. I mean, I've had to wrestle and buy my dinner that night because I was a paycheck short, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens.
It does. Comedy, the autonomy is what the autonomy is, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, people don't, like, you know, get, you know, like I said, these guys want to get out here and, you know, hit a promoter up, you know, oh, yeah, I need $150, $200, and you 30 minutes down the road. Come on, man. You know what I'm saying? Be reasonable.
That's what I'm saying. let's see. I'm running out of topics.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, how many questions do you have?
These are just ones that are just blowing off my head. I mean, I don't know how to, stuff that's been asked to me, I figured I'd ask to somebody else, I guess. those topics, I've got to, like, know you and your career a lot, you know.
Oh, yeah, because I put a lot of time and effort into, you know, the wrestling aspect of it, marketing myself, getting my name and brand out there. And like, I got in an argument with a guy on Facebook. He was talking about, well, that's why you still, you know, work in the indies. I say, hey, I don't have no problem working in the indies. You know, he talking about, well, I'm no longer in the business and stuff like that. So why are you coming at me? What it stemmed over is I made a post on Facebook, and I'm just going to tell, like, you know that Shayna Baszler?
Yeah.
I put on a post that said, Shayna Baszler is one ugly-ass female. That's what I posted. Okay. And I just don't like the way she looked in the face. Nothing. I didn't say anything bad about her wrestling ability. Okay. Most of the people that commented on the post agree with me, but you know, it's always got to be that one ass that's got to, you know, stretch it too far. And he got on there and started talking about, oh, was she not in WWE for her looks? I said, well, I never said she was. And then he started in on me, and I'm like, you know, he started talking about this, that, and the other. And I like, look, dude, I said, I'm going to tell you, everybody, because he's talking about, well, some people don't like you. I said, I don't care. I said, when they start paying my bills, I'll be concerned about what they think.
Yep,
how many times, let me tell you something, how many times have I went to a show, okay, and I worked heel, bad guy, and the majority of the people didn't like me. That's my job. That's my job.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be hated. You know?
Yeah, so I'm saying that's my job. That's how you get heat. Okay, but he was like, I said, okay, I said, I can care less. I said, then he started in about, and then I started telling him some of the things I've been in business and done in the business and broken bones I've had and injuries I've suffered and stuff like that. He said, well, I'm no longer in the business. I said, well, you know, you're no longer in the business. I said, so why are you coming to me? Have you been to WWE? Have you been to Ring of Honor? Have you been to TNA? No. So you were so just on the indies just like I was. I said, there's a whole bunch of guys on the indies. I said, a whole bunch of guys on the indies looking for a shot. I said, but the pool is small. Everybody ain't going to make it. I said, the thing about me, I didn't even try to make it. I wasn't concerned about making it. I just wanted to have fun being a professional wrestler, enjoy doing what I'm doing. If I want to take 6 months off, I can do that. You're in the WWE, so you can't do that. You're on the contract. You can't do that unless you're injured.
Yeah.
You know, because if I want to take 6 months off or 9 months off and step away from it, which I've done from time to time, take a couple months off here, 3 months off there. Sometimes they can heal up and just let my body heal up, stuff like that. And
sometimes the body.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I can do that. Let my body rest. But those guys got to go every Monday night, you know. You got to say, I'm 52 years old. So you can understand why I would take some time off at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
And now with this coronavirus thing going around, I might be down for a little bit, so you don't know. But, you know, with all that going on, so, you know, I just assumed with all this talk about the virus outbreak and people panicking and going crazy and stuff like that, and especially with, you know, Governor Roy Cooper issuing that executive order to not have more than 100 people at any one gathering at any one time, I'm like, oh, Lord, that's going to hurt in the wrestling in the state. So I don't know. I guess we just have to wait and see and play it by ear, see how it goes.
Scott, I have a question. One of the people that you've come across fairly often in your career, and you always seem to have good things to say about them, is the cousin of J.B. Moonshine, Casey Carlisle. What can you tell us about Casey Carlisle and your opinions on her?
Oh, Casey Carlisle? Oh, God. I've wrestled or worked numerous shows with Casey. She's always professional. She shows up. She does her job. And she knows what she's doing between the ropes, by the way. For all you people that don't know, because I've had the chance to sit back and watch her matches and watch the psychology of her matches, and she's very good at getting the girl she works in the ring, getting them over if they know how to work.
Yeah.
She's very professional, and like I said, I've done a lot of BWF shows, AIWF shows with her. You know, over the years, I haven't seen her in a while. I mean, we talk on Facebook every once in a while, but she's one of the few females in the business that I highly respect, only because I've worked around her and been able to spend time with her and see how she does in the, you know, how she does and what she does in the business. I mean, she's a real deal, no question about it. And you can tell I said so.
I will for sure.
Yeah, great professional. Really professional.
JB, is that more proof that the wrestling world is a very small place?
Yes, it is.
Well, QT, you're with us. Did you have any questions for Scrapyard?
Yes, I do. I have several questions for Mr. Scrapyard, but I'd like to take a quick shout-out to JB. You've had a very good introduction on Turnbuckle Turmoil. You did a very good job. You may have passed the audition.
Thank you, JB.
Okay. Well, Mr. Scrapyard, you mentioned earlier to Sign Guy and JB about taking time off for your injuries. Here's a question that has never been asked on the Turnbuckle Turmoil show. Have you ever had any hand surgeries for hand injuries that you have got in the ring? Hand surgery.
Oh yeah. I remember I can remember one specific incident where I did a show. We were doing this Power Pro Wrestling out in Sanford. You know, Dick Foley was promoted at the time. And a wrestling guy by the name of Leroy Green. And we had wrestled like four or five matches. We did a program, okay, you know, complete with promos and who was going over the matches and all that kind of stuff. We had all that worked out, okay, and eventually it led to me dropping the internet, Power Pro internet title to him, which I held. Oh, he's big baby face. The crowd loved him. And what happened was, the final match where I dropped the title. It was the final match, the fifth match. I dislocated my finger, my pinky finger, on my right hand. And like I said, it's still, you know, kind of swollen. If you look at my left pinky finger and my right pinky finger, you know, they reset it, but it still wasn't, you know, it's like it needed to be. So it's got a little lump in it. But I dislocated my finger 10 minutes into a 20-25 minute match, and didn't realize it. I didn't realize it until I got back to the back, and the referee looked at him and said, "Scrap, look at your finger." And that's happened. Looked down, it was all swollen. So, oh God, so how'd that happen? I didn't even feel it. You know, so I didn't feel any pain. Didn't know it was dislocated. And I had to go to the doctor. You know, that Monday, and they tried to set it. You know, so get the swelling down, all that kind of whatever they do with that. Reset it and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that has happened. And like I said, I've had broken bones and, you know, contusions and swelling and cuts and scrapes and all kinds of things. You know, being slammed on thumbtacks. Foley one time put me through a table where he gave me a superplex off a table. I mean, off of the top rope onto the table, which had barbed wire on it, thumbtacks all over, and we lit it on fire. And that was
wow.
Trust me when I tell you this, that was an ECW holy shit moment right there. That's what that was.
Wow.
The crowd went nuts. Yeah, they went. The crowd went nuts over there, and it was packed. I mean, 200-300 people. Cause me, one thing about me and Foley, you know, no matter what the card was, once we got into the hardcore stuff, we knew the show was going to end with some type of gimmick match that involved me and him. And it was either fighting over the Power Pro title or what have you. So, I've been through it. Been hit with kendo sticks. And like I said, dog collar matches are always rough because, you know, that's my specialty. Indian strap matches, I've done Indian strap matches. Like I said, Russian chain matches. Texas bull rope matches. I've done them all.
Have you ever been body slammed on rubber ducks because they had a rubber duck match up here in Washington?
No, I don't think I've ever done the rubber duck thing.
Okay. All right.
I don't believe I've ever done the rubber duck. I've been slammed on thumbtacks, though.
Oh, okay.
I've been slammed through tables. You know what I'm saying? I've been slammed on chairs.
Wow. How about Legos? Lego pieces?
I'm pretty sure some of the matches me and Foley did inside of steel cages probably was some Legos in somewhere. Yeah, a couple Legos in somewhere. I remember one time, the first time I worked Foley inside of a steel cage, the match was billed as a – he actually dropped the title to me that night. And it was billed as a hardcore, no time limit – barbed wire, thumbtack, fans bring the weapons, last man standing match. And that was the night Baby Doll, turned on Foley, because, you know, she'd always come out with Foley. And, you know, she turned on him and joined our side, and crowd was pissed because Foley was a big baby face, and I had the heat for the next 6 months.
Wow.
And trust me, I tell you, I ran with it. They could not stand me. for the next 6 months. That was that stretch right there, that run right there was probably the greatest I've had in the business.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Wow. Huh. Okay. Well, Mr. Scrapyard, in the history of World War II, there are a number of people known as double bomb blast victims. They were the people that survived the first bomb blast when they were in Hiroshima, only to travel to the second city the following day or so and get bombed again in Nagasaki. Mm-hmm. My question is, do you have this effect on your opponents, a double bomb blast victim type thing?
Well, I've had guys that, you know, that I beat up real bad. Like, take for instance, Ty Tyson, one of my students, one of my best students. I tried everything I could in the book to make him quit. I would rough on him in training. I'd beat him up, and he just kept coming back. He would not lay down. I tried everything I could to make him quit. He wouldn't quit. So when you talk about going from Hiroshima to Nagasaki, he was that guy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And, you know, he exhibited a lot of toughness because, I mean, the ass whoopings I laid on him in some of the matches we had when he first got started, when the storyline finally got to me versus Ty Tyson for whatever was going on, yeah, I beat him up. But he throwed it right back.
Wow, fantastic.
So because,
okay.
Because I was training, when I was training him, I did the same thing in training. So, I mean, so he knew what to expect. But it's different in front of a crowd, okay, when you got people watching versus training. And
wow.
back then I would just beat the shit out of him. That's just the way it was. Because that's the way I was training. I trained the guys that I trained that way, in that style. That old school style, that, you know, they hit hard and make it look real and make it look believable. My thing has always been believability. Okay.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you see him next, you'll have to nickname him the double bomb blast victim. You'll have to give him that nickname.
Matter of fact, you know, he's married to now he's married and got a couple kids by. The promoter's daughter, he's a booker for AIWF now. And I told him, I said, good job. You know, he's booking the show and, you know, putting me in, you know, in situations to succeed. Because he never forgot, you know, what I taught him. And I told him, I said, you know, it's not about me. I said, you know, push some of these young guys, you know, say, I said, because I'm not going to be around forever. You know, but I take a chance every once in a while, maybe get a title level once in a while. And, you know, show up every once in a while. People still know I am still a big babyface in AIWF. But, yeah, I'm super proud of everything he's accomplished in life. But
well,
when,
very
like I
said,
good. When I first started training, I mean, I beat the crap out of him. And he just kept coming back. You know, he'd come and show up the next Sunday. I'm ready to train. I'm like,
wow.
Damn. I mean, I guarantee you, I throwed everything at Ty Tyson. I poured all my energy, training, toughness, ability into this cat, and he just soaked it up like a sponge. He just kept coming back, kept going, what are we doing today? What are we learning today? He was that type of guy. I mean, it was a pleasure to train him because you don't get guys like that every day, especially not
now. No, you don't. Wow. Okay.
You can't train guys today like training was back in the 70s and 80s, because it was rough back then, boy. It was rough. Because I was trained by some of the guys. It was rough. I'm going to tell you, my first couple of years in the business, I got my ass handed to me. No wins, all losses. Got beat up. But it got to a point with those vets that I was around at the time, it was like, you know, give me that guy right there because he sells my shit. You know what I'm saying? He makes me look good. So I earn their respect that way.
Oh, you know, that's I've heard stories of Rip Oliver and the Klan doing that to people, trying them out.
Yeah, man, that's just the way it was. back in the old school days, they'd hook you. These guys were shooters and hookers. They'd hook the shit out of you. They'd beat you up, try to make you quit. That's what I tried to do at the time. I tried to make you quit. He just wouldn't quit. He just wouldn't.
Wow. It's kind of like having a tryout in Bret Hart's Family Dungeon back in the day.
Family Dungeon,
they stretched a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Scrapyard, the rock group Kiss has a song called Burn, Bitch, Burn. And some of the lyrics go like this. I got nasty habits. It's a fine line. So many girls and so little time. When love rears its head, I want to get on your case. I want to put my log in your fireplace. Are there any truths to the rumors I hear from my wrestling sources out of Shelton, Washington, that you and Defola Debashi are thinking of having this song as your new theme song on your conspiracy show?
I hadn't heard that, but I guess I can get with Defola about that, but I hadn't heard that. I have to talk to him about that. I don't know about, a lot of people, the Kiss only had one song they put out that I actually liked. Can you guess what that song is?
What's that?
Beth.
Oh, Beth, yes.
Yeah, the ballad that they put out. That's the only Kiss song they've ever put out I liked. I don't know why. I've just never been a big Kiss fan.
Oh, okay.
I mean, AC/DC, yeah.
Yeah, a whole lot of Rosie was good.
Yeah, Deep Purple, yeah. Cream, yeah. Led Zeppelin, oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was never a very, very big Kiss fan.
All right. Okay. Well, Scrapyard, on the show Family Guy, during season 4, episode 4, which was called Don't Make Me Over, Cleveland, Joe, Peter, and Quagmire find a karaoke machine at the Drunken Clam. They perform Journey's Don't Stop Believing, and people loved it and tell them that they were fantastic. Now, Joe, Peter, and Quagmire, and who was the other one? Cleveland, they were thrilled with their success in their singing Don't Stop Believin', so they decided to form a rock band and travel and form a group. And their first gig was at a prison. The band named itself Fat, Horny, Black, and Joe. And they were about to launch into their opening number at the prison when they realized that they didn't know any songs. And the prisoners started to riot as a result. My question is, if you formed a band like Peter called Fat, Horny, Black, and Joe, which local wrestler would be fat in your group? Which would be the fat member?
I'd probably have to say Oogle Boogle.
Okay.
He'd be the fat member. You know, the one I told you to do the Kamala type gimmick? He'd be the fat guy. But, but who in the right mind would name a band like that with that type of name? Oh, my God. That's kind of out there. I don't know if I'm like, no, we can't do that. Too many connotations on that one. I'd have to stay clear of that.
All right, I'm going to say that wrestler that you named takes on Peter Griffin-like qualities. Which local wrestler would be the member known as Horny, and he takes on the attributes of Quagmire? Which local wrestler would most be like Quagmire?
I had to think on that one.
Okay.
Yes.
Which local wrestler would take on the attributes and qualities of Joe, the policeman in a wheelchair.
Oh, boy, you really got me stumped on this. I had to get back to you on that one, too.
Okay, all right. How about which local wrestler would take on the qualities of Cleveland, and which one would be known as black?
I'd say I'd go to Nick Darden, who's actually a manager, he's not a wrestler. Nick Darden and probably William Huckabee.
Oh, okay.
Those two local ones I can think of.
Okay. Well, Mr. Scrapyard, my advice to you is if you ever find yourself in a bar, call the Drunken Clam to not find a karaoke machine and not sing. Then you won't have to form a group like this.
No, I wouldn't do that. I definitely wouldn't do that. Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that. I got that one covered.
Okay.
You know, sometimes in life you just have to say no, and I just have to say no. No, not doing it.
Oh, all right. I guess it's up to me and Sign Guy to form a group like this. Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm going to leave that one up to you guys.
Okay.
Well, guys,
and at this time,
a few minutes left, so Scrapyard, if there's anything you wanted to say to listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, go right ahead.
Well, like I said, I appreciate you guys having me on once again. It's been fun. It's been entertaining, as usual. You can find me on Twitter, SYDog336. You can follow me on Instagram, same handle, SYDog336. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/LewisMcNair2. And like I said, I'm also want to support the Conspiracy Talk, the radio show, Conspiracy Talk radio show. That's, you can listen to it on Podbean, iTunes, and Spotify. And that's all I got.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. As always, always a pleasure to have you. JB Moonshine, you have anything you want to plug, promote before we go today?
JB Moonshine, you can catch me on Facebook. Always at BCW every Sunday. You can find me in Washington doing CPW and MWP.
All right. Well, fans, there's still a show near you. Go and support that. Double check on if your shows are still running. A lot of things canceling due to the current events going on right now. Be safe out there. We will be back with you next week, next Friday afternoon. Congo Kong, formerly of Impact, will be back with us. And then 1 week from today, Trey Havoc will be our guest. So join us then. Be safe out there, and we will talk to you soon.